Our show is supported by Be My Guest with Ina Garten, Ina's official podcast from Food Network, back for its fourth season. On every episode, Ina invites a different friend to her home in the Hamptons to talk about life, love, and career, all while cooking up an amazing meal. Join Ina as she crafts a classic cocktail with journalist Frank Bruni and discusses the ins and outs of Yorkshire pudding with actress Emily Mortimer. If you're looking for great conversations about and over good food, tune in to Be My Guest with Ina Garten. Listen to Be My Guest with Ina Garten wherever you get your podcasts. Hi, it's Francis Lamb, and welcome to Splendid Table Selects, our little mini podcast where we share the interviews that inspired us, taught us something, or just made us better cooks. Our presenting sponsor is Bob's Red Mill. They're an employee-owned company that's offered organic, gluten-free, stone-ground products for decades, and they're experts at making healthy taste amazing. I'll tell you more about Bob's Red Mill later, but first, let's get to the show. A lot of people consider Philadelphia home of the cheesesteak, and that is obviously not wrong. But there's an impressive vegan scene happening in the city as well, in large part because of Kate Jacoby and Rich Landau. They're the owners of three restaurants in the city, including Veg, a vegan fine dining restaurant, and WizKid, a, if you can believe it, a vegan cheesesteak joint that is delicious. I met up with Kate and Rich at Veg, where we hung out and talked about the ever-expanding world of vegan food. Have a listen. So Rich, Kate, thank you so much for having us here today.
Thanks for being here.
So it is exciting to be here in Philadelphia, the home of the cheesesteak, and to be at Veg, which is, I think, the other most famous and most renowned Philadelphia culinary destination.
How far we've come.
Yeah, the vegan restaurant Veg. And I remember hearing about you so many years ago when I honestly couldn't even imagine there was such a thing as beautiful, creative, fine dining vegan food, because my head was still in this world where, like, oh, vegan food is about subtraction. It's about, you know, not about people who don't enjoy food, but it's about like taking things away. And it wasn't about, oh, what are the creative possibilities that are available when you actually, you know, have a different set of parameters. But have you always cooked vegan, or did you train like more omnivorously and then convert your?
Well, I grew up cooking, you know, with my parents. You know, we'd always have these great meals, and I always contributed, and I started taking over. So I always loved to cook. You know, when I became a vegetarian in my teens, it became a little difficult because a lot of our staple meals revolved around animal meat.
Sure.
You know, we did chicken on the grill and what have you, you know, back, you know, all the staples families like that ate back then. So when I gave up meat, it was for ethical reasons only. I love the taste of it. I still miss it. So I had to teach myself how to cook and kind of like satisfy this carnivorous palate of mine, because if I wasn't eating really great food without meat, I was going to go back to meat, and I didn't want to do that. So and I agree with you, back then, you know a lot of vegetarian food was an apology. It was about what you're not getting. You know, and these days it's completely opposite. It's about all the benefits and what you are getting. I think it's an amazing time to eat vegan. You know, it makes people really happy. People are into it. It's an exciting way to eat. And you're not really missing anything. You can have a bacon cheeseburger. You can have a turkey club sandwich. You can do almost anything.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, it's incredible. And like, you know, this is maybe a different issue, but like, oh, now you have these totally new, like the Impossible Burger and these like different kinds of, I mean, people call them lab meats, which makes it sound super gross, but super interesting the way like, oh, technology is allowing us to take proteins and, you know, different, you know, flavor essential compounds out of plants and make it very meat-like. But again, you know, that's sort of maybe in the future we'll all be eating, you know, meat that didn't actually come from an animal.
Yeah, we will be.
But
I think when you think about any meat, where it's coming from, it's kind of gross. So whether it's lab meat or, you know, when you really want to go into any of the details, nobody wants to talk about that, or at least not most
people. It's like
people.
Old gross is for some reason better than new gross.
Yeah. But I think if you look at the history, it's sort of like vegetables always were just thought of as garnishes, you know, as like parsley on the steak, or maybe as like a side, like rich, a baked potato or something. But I think nowadays, not only is it the idea of like what you can have as a vegan, but how delicious it is, because now we're focusing on the quality of our vegetables and how diverse they are and how you can really get so much out of them. I think where Rich's palate comes in is he's able to get that flavor out of things that you wouldn't think of, you know, like whether it's a carrot or a cauliflower or something. And if you apply that same technique, you can get so much from the whole, you know, plant-based world. So
I also think there's been a tremendous revolution in the way we look at food in the past couple of years. And it's a combination of the farm-to-table movement and the internet. Now, the farm-to-table movement made people fall in love with vegetables. They show these pictures of the chefs out at the farm, talking to the farmer, pulling the carrot out of the ground and kind of like waxing poetic about its beautiful, you know, attributes. And, you know, you're surrounded by all these plants. You pick the tomato off. What they don't show you is what happens to meat. You know, you don't see them walking around petting the cow and saying, okay, now let's get this onto the plate. It's a completely different process. You can eat a tomato off the vine and it's going to be one of the best things you've ever eaten. To get the cow onto your plate, to see that process is a little bit more, you know, and those are the kind of videos, these kind of secret slaughterhouse videos that are showing up on the internet that are really changing people's mind about where food comes from. Yeah. Sure. The internet's really changed everything. This was a very secretive thing. Nobody wanted to see where meat came from before. You didn't talk about it. You knew it, but you didn't talk about
it. Especially to do it on a massive scale, because I think there's that aspect too about just food production in general. Whether you're talking about meat or anything else, it's sort of like, well, where, what's the provenance of your food and how clean does it come to you and how many people are affected along the way? And, you know, and I think everyone strives to do the best they can. And when you're given a convenient opportunity to do that, like, people will choose that. So it's interesting to watch from our vantage point, especially.
Right. And Kate, in your world, in the pastry world, what is it like working without butter and eggs and cream? Like, in Western pastry, like, so much of that kitchen is based on those things.
It is. I don't really know anything different, though. You know, like, I make the cheesecake here at Veg, and I just have no idea. Like, I've never made a regular mainstream, I say mainstream, I've never made a mainstream cheesecake. So it's just sort of like how I came up in the world, right? And I baked with traditional mainstream ingredients my whole life, just, you know, for fun at home. When I started working with Rich in the kitchen, I thought, oh, I could learn the same techniques that he's carved out and apply them to pastry. So it was always about flavor first. And I would look at a regular recipe, like a mainstream recipe, and I'd see what the butter or the eggs were contributing to the recipe, and then I would just try to find the simplest, cleanest solution to just kind of sub things out. So I've always tried to not make it totally different, just rely on some really good clean fats, whether it's coconut oil or olive oil or any of the great products they make right now, vegan butters, vegan shortening. They're really versatile and they really do a great job.
So I have to ask you one thing, because you do have a vegan cheesesteak.
Yeah.
So what goes on the vegan cheese whiz? What goes in the vegan cheese whiz?
Well, we make it out of rutabaga, actually. You know, and you heard it here, rutabaga is going to be the next big vegetable.
Yeah,
yeah, you know? Totally.
Cauliflower steaks, see you later. So 2017. I never want to see another one as long as I eat, to be honest with you. Rutabaga, chefs are going to fall in love with this vegetable. So first of all, it's beautiful. It's got this great orange color. Rutabaga is also one of the very few vegetables that makes its own stock as you cook it. Other examples of this would be kohlrabi, kale, any of the broccolis, Chinese broccoli, traditional broccoli. If you boil them in salt water, you could basically drink the water with a spoon and they make their own stock, and it's perfect. So rutabaga does that. And so we boil the rutabagas up and we use some of their stock to put back into it, a little bit of tofu mayo, some nutritional yeast, some miso. Now, the whole idea behind the miso is you're thinking, okay, well, is this an Asian flavored cheese whiz? It's not. When you use things like tamari and miso very subtly, they add this kind of umami richness in the beginning. If you add too much, it will start to taste like an Asian sauce.
Sure.
You add just a little bit in the foundation.
Just a little bit backbone and you get that, and a little of foundation. Yeah.
Exactly. You get this cheesiness in there. And so it took us years to figure out this perfect combination of the miso and the rutabaga and the tofu and the nutritional yeast and a little bit of shallot in there, a couple seasoning adjustments, but it tastes like cheese whiz.
Awesome.
So it just makes you wonder what's in the real thing. It's not rutabaga.
And nutritional yeast is great too, because it's like, you know, people have referred to it, like I've always heard, it's like, oh, it's sort of like vegan cheese flavor, but it always to me tasted more like cheese powder, like a little bit like
that concentrated
cheese, like delicious, because I grew up eating Doritos and all that stuff, but like it tasted more like that than actual cheese, but like, oh, that's how you make vegan cheese whiz. Like, that's perfect.
There you go.
Well, thank you so much for having us.
Our pleasure.
That was Rich Landau and Kate Jacoby, the chefs of Veg, V Street, and Whiz Kid restaurants in Philadelphia, and Fancy Radish in Washington, D.C. And we happen to have their recipes for dashi, chickpea, quote-unquote tuna salad, and coconut custard. You'd find them all on our website, splendidtable.org. And when Rich and Kate were talking about their rutabaga, quote, cheese whiz sauce that they make for their vegan cheesesteaks, they mentioned nutritional yeast was one of the key ingredients, and I honestly have no idea how this happened or why it is continuing to happen, but like not a week goes by in my life without someone bringing up nutritional yeast anymore. I don't, like, all of a sudden everyone just wants to talk about nutritional yeast, but it's basically a vegetarian dietary supplement with a cheesy kind of flavor, like, but not like real cheese. It's more like the cheese dust you find in your favorite bad for you snacks. But it's actually rich in vitamin B12 and provides 6 grams of protein per serving. And people use it in sauces and scrambles or just sprinkled over stuff like vegetables or, you know, popcorn and potato chips. And this is where Bob's Red Mill comes back in, because you can find a lot more about their nutritional yeast. They make a large flake nutritional yeast and all their other products and recipes at bobsredmill.com.
I'm Tanya Mosley. In 1987, my sister Anita vanished without a trace. Decades later, thanks to DNA, we found her. But that's only the beginning of the story. She Has a Name is a new audio documentary that explores the search for redemption, confronting trauma, and healing in the face of unimaginable loss. Subscribe now to Truth Be Told Presents She Has a Name, where every revelation brings us closer to the truth.